one. It's an expensive one.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the program, Dorothy Gundy and I bring you the Higher Education Report. We look at the story of a small college in the southern state of Florida. Students at New College worry the state government is going to change what they love about the school. After that, Ana Mateo has words and their stories. She teaches us when to use the word dump. And finally, Kelly Jean Kelly brings us the next part in our series on America's presidents. This week, Andrew Jackson. Now, here is the Higher Education Report. Willem Aspinall is a 19-year-old student at New College of Florida. He grew up near Chicago. He called his school, near the small city of Sarasota, a little bubble. The term bubble means a safe or protected area. New College of Florida is a public liberal arts college that is an independent school in the state university system of Florida. The state recently changed the college's leadership group, known as the Board of Trustees, removed the president, and closed the Office of Diversity and Equity. After that, Aspinall said, the bubble has kind of been burst. No plans have been written down yet, but the school's new leaders promised changes within 120 days. One of the new trustees is Christopher Rufo, who often writes about higher education and is critical of New College. He said his group is out to recapture the college. Some current students will leave, and the college aims to accept new ones, who will be, in his words, mission aligned. The board will change the school's study programs. The changes are part of what some people call a war on woke by the state's governor, Ron DeSantis, and his allies. Dictionary publisher Merriam-Webster says woke is a term that describes a person's attentiveness to issues of racial and social justice. But some people and groups, especially conservatives in the U.S., now use the word to attack and express their opposition to those who are woke.
DeSantis is seen as a possible Republican Party candidate for the presidency in 2024. Earlier this year, he called for new legislation that would change higher education for colleges and universities in Florida. DeSantis says he wants legislation that will generally require classes to be based on educational ideas rather than political ideas. He says he wants students to finish with degrees that lead to high-paying jobs. And he wants to ban public schools from supporting programs that put forward divisive ideas. In addition, the Florida governor wants boards of trustees to have the power to reconsider a professor's job guarantee, called tenure at any time. And he is calling for university presidents to have power over the hiring process. New College is different from many large universities in Florida. With only 700 students, it has more in common with small liberal arts colleges in New England than the University of Florida, which has nearly 35,000 students. Many students create their own study programs with the help of teachers. The students say they feel welcome to be themselves. As a result, New College brings in students who did not like being in other places. Some did not go to traditional high schools, but learned at home. The professors know all their students by name. Most classes only have about 10 students. Elizabeth Leininger is a science professor. It is one of the most unique places, I think, that exists in American higher education, she said. But with the leadership change, she said she is concerned one of her classes called Sex, Gender, Mind, and Brain might be canceled. I would have to think very carefully about how I am going to teach that class now, Leininger added. There is very much a policing of ideas. So she uses her personal email to discuss her concerns.
Olivia Paré studies biology at the school. She said, I am here to learn. I am not here to be more woke.
Like, my professors are more stressed. There's just a lot more stress and anxiety in my education than I feel like is necessary. I just want to get my degree in peace, you know?
Paré noted that students are no longer talking about science in her classes. They are talking about whether their professors will be permitted to keep teaching at New College of Florida. Because it is small and open, the school is good for students like Lola White. White is both autistic and has ADHD, which makes it hard for her to center her attention on tasks such as schoolwork. But at New College, she has been happy for the first time. I felt like I could connect to the people here. The kids are accepting of anyone. There is no judgment, she said. White said when she was having problems with her schoolwork, people offered help. She said she is going to stay at the school for the time being, although some of her friends are leaving. New College is not without its problems. Some buildings are old and need to be repaired. In some recent years, the school had fewer students than it would have liked. Other students said they would not mind going to school with classmates who have different opinions. Some people at the school are already noticing that small things are different. For example, professors have been instructed to change the information they give at the end of an email. It can only include their name, job description, the school's address, and their phone number. An event for students thinking about coming to the school was canceled with little notice, and cleaning workers washed off messages written on the side of a bridge on campus. Some of the messages were critical of DeSantis and the new board members. Aspinall, who talked about the bubble of New College, now worries that the new leaders will take a school that does not indoctrinate students and turn it into one that does. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Trash may not be a glamorous subject, but it is an important one. We can throw our trash into a container called a trash can. We can dispose of our garbage in a garbage can. We can dump our unwanted things in a dumpster. All these unwanted things might end up at a landfill, sometimes called a dump. We explored being down in the dumps in a recent Words and Their Stories. Being at the bottom of a dump is probably not a nice place to be. If you are down in the dumps, you feel sad. Down in the dumps means you have the blues, or you feel out of sorts. You are the opposite of happy. If your friend is down in the dumps, you could try to do something fun to lift their spirits. You could take them to their favorite restaurant or a movie to cheer them up. The verb dump means to place things without care. For example, when I wash my clothes, I dump the dirty clothes on the floor in front of the washer. But I don't dump the clean clothes on the floor. They are clean. Dumping them on the floor could make them dirty again. We can dump other things besides trash and dirty clothes. If you dump on someone, you say bad things about them. You show them little respect. And at work, you do not want to receive a document dump. This means someone has given you a huge number of documents. Usually, you have to deal with them in some way. Now, let's hear these dump expressions in a conversation between two coworkers.
Hey, let's go. TGIF, time to have some fun.
I can't. You guys go ahead without me.
Why? And why are you so down in the dumps?
Karen just dumped a huge stack of work on my desk.
She gave you a document dump at 5 o'clock on Friday?
She did. And she wants me to file it all before I leave.
Can't you tell her you'll do it on Monday morning?
I tried. She said no.
You know, she did that to me once, and I dumped her document dump right in the dumpster.
Did you get in trouble?
No. She didn't even ask about those stupid papers. I don't mean to dump on her, but dumping a bunch of needless work on someone on a Friday is a mean thing to do.
You know what? You're right. I'm coming with you guys. This document dump can wait until Monday.
And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English broadcast. You just heard Anna Mateo's production about items or feelings no one wants. Welcome, Anna. Tell us again about the word that you wrote about in this week's episode.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for the invite. Well, for this week's Words and Their Stories, I wrote about the word dump. One meaning is to get rid of something or to put something down without care.
So, Anna, I did some spring cleaning recently, and your episode this week reminded me of the items I found in some old boxes. I had not unpacked them since I moved a year ago. when I sorted through old papers, I made a keep and a dump pile. How are some other ways our listeners can use the word dump?
An example is dumping trash on the ground. Also, something that happens at some workplaces is a document dump. This is when a coworker gives you a bunch of paperwork.
Yeah, Anna, no one likes to be dumped on.
And getting a document dump can make you feel down in the dumps or sad. It can be a lot of work.
Anna, you are right about that one. Thanks for joining us.
Bye, Dan. Talk to you again.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Andrew Jackson, the seventh president, was unlike the earlier U.S. presidents. His family was poor. He had little education, and he lived on what was then the western part of the country. Jackson became nationally known in the early 1800s, first as a fighter against Native American tribes, and then as a general in the War of 1812 against the British. His image as a military hero and man of the people made him a popular choice for the presidency. But critics said Jackson did not accept any limits on his power. He is also remembered for supporting slavery and for forcing Native Americans from their homes. Andrew Jackson's parents were immigrants from Ireland. His father died in an accident before Andrew, the third and youngest son, was born. When the American colonies entered a war of independence, Andrew and his two brothers fought against the British, although Andrew was too young to be a regular soldier. Andrew's oldest brother soon died. Then Andrew and his other brother were both captured by British soldiers. One cut Andrew's face, leaving a scar that remained his entire life. But Andrew, unlike his brother, survived captivity. A short time later, Andrew's mother became sick and died. By age 15, Andrew Jackson had no living immediate family. He had already stopped attending school, but taught himself enough to become a lawyer. He moved to what became Nashville, Tennessee, where he developed a successful law career. In time, he bought land and slaves. Jackson was tall and thin, with red hair and bright blue eyes. Sometimes Jackson was playful. He loved to dance, hold parties, and play games where he could win money. Sometimes he was violent. He was known for getting angry easily. Jackson fought duels with several men. In one, he killed a man who insulted his wife. Yet many people liked Jackson's passionate, action-first personality. By the time the United States entered the War of 1812, Jackson had been a congressman, senator, and judge. Jackson did not have any officially recognized military training, but during the War of 1812, he volunteered in the Tennessee Militia and quickly took control of troops. Many of his soldiers came to respect him. Jackson refused to give up, even when the government ordered the militia to disband, and when some of the men wanted to leave, he threatened them with a gun. Because he was uncompromising and strong as a tree, soldiers called Jackson Old Hickory. A group of Creek Indians gave him another name. After he defeated them in battle, Jackson negotiated a treaty that punished both his Native American enemies and his Native American allies. The treaty was more severe than the U.S. government had asked. In time, it forced the Creeks, as well as several other tribes, off their land. The move was popular with many white settlers. It was less popular with the Creeks, who called Jackson Sharp Knife. His best-known military operation was in New Orleans, Louisiana. A large, experienced army of British soldiers moved to attack. Jackson defended the city with a small group of untrained soldiers. His group included volunteers, free blacks, Creoles, Native Americans, and pirates. Jackson's ragtag troops not only defeated the British force, but suffered only a few losses. Jackson didn't know that the battle came after the British and Americans had already agreed to end the war. But his victory there gave many Americans a feeling of pride. It also made Jackson famous. He became known across the country as the hero of New Orleans. Voters across the country supported Jackson, too. He was especially well-liked in the South and West. Many Americans saw him as a man of the people. They believed his success came from experience and hard work, not wealth and family connections. In the presidential election of 1824, Jackson received more popular and electoral votes than any of the other candidates. But because no candidate had a majority, lawmakers in the House of Representatives decided the election. Those lawmakers chose John Quincy Adams, the son of former President John Adams. They were persuaded, in part, because a leader in Congress named Henry Clay said Jackson did not have the temperament to be president. Immediately after Quincy Adams won, he appointed Clay Secretary of State. The appointment angered Jackson. He believed Adams and Clay had entered into a corrupt bargain. In the next presidential election 4 years later, Jackson defeated Quincy Adams in a landslide. And in the presidential election after that, he crushed Henry Clay. Jackson wanted to be a powerful leader who controlled a limited federal government, but he wanted that government to have power over state governments. For example, Jackson refused to let the state of South Carolina nullify, or ignore, a federal law that state officials opposed. Jackson said if they failed to obey the law, he would consider them traitors and send in troops. In time, South Carolina and Congress were able to reach a compromise on the law. Jackson also refused to extend the charter of the National Bank. He believed the bank helped industrialists and businesses more than farmers and settlers. His move was popular with many voters, especially farmers and settlers. But Jackson's opponents warned against the bank veto. They disagreed with his economic plan, and they objected to how he had operated outside of Congress. Senators censured Jackson for acting as if he did not have to follow the law. Jackson's supporters fought back. They removed the official criticism from the Senate records. Jackson vetoed more bills than the first six presidents combined. He actively worked for only one major law, the Indian Removal Act of 1830. Jackson believed Native Americans occupied land that should belong to white settlers. He also thought Native Americans would be destroyed or lose their culture to white people anyway. So he offered several tribes what appeared to be generous treaties to move onto land west of the Mississippi River. But the treaties were often unfair or illegal. The tribes who accepted rarely received the benefits Jackson promised them, and some tribes, such as the Cherokees, simply refused to go. Empowered by Jackson's Indian Removal Act, U.S. government officials eventually forced 15,000 Cherokees off their land. They were made to march over 1,600 kilometers. About 4,000 died on the march. It is remembered as the Trail of Tears. For white settlers, Jackson's Indian removal policies resulted in over 100,000 square kilometers of new land to farm. Thousands of cotton planters moved west with their enslaved workers. The Indian Removal Act served not only to aid an economic boom in cotton, but to spread slavery further in the United States. Jackson had no objections. In 1837, Jackson officially moved out of the White House, but he did not really leave the presidency. He advised the presidents who followed him from his home in Tennessee. Jackson had particular influence over two future leaders, Martin Van Buren, his former vice president, and James Polk, who shared Jackson's beliefs so closely that he was called Young Hickory. Jackson's beloved wife, Rachel, had died before he took office. They did not have any children together, but they raised two boys, a Native American orphan who died as a teenager, and a nephew, whom they called Andrew Jackson Jr. The younger Andrew Jackson and his wife lived with the former president in his final years. He died in his bed at 78 of old wounds and old age, but his legacy remains very much alive. Jackson changed the U.S. presidency. After him, presidential candidates had to show they could connect with voters, not just lawmakers. He also increased the power of the chief executive. Jackson often questioned, or dismissed, the power of Congress, the Constitution, and the Supreme Court. And he began the custom of replacing experienced government officials with people whose main qualification was their loyalty to him. Critics added to Jackson's nicknames. They called him King Andrew, King Mob, or American Caesar. The opposition to Jackson led to a new political party called the Whigs. Part of Jackson's legacy is the two major party system that exists in the U.S. today. But those who loved Jackson really loved him. His humble beginnings, rise to power, and defense of the common man inspired them. In the U.S., the name of Andrew Jackson is still often used as a positive symbol of American democracy. I'm Kelly Jean Keller.
And that's the Learning English broadcast for today. Thank you, Kelly, for that report. And thanks to all my VOA colleagues for their help on today's program. Most importantly, thank you for listening. For more, visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Dan Friedell.